It's a fairly common thing on this show and through the years that I shine a light on some of our major holidays. Tomorrow is one such holiday, and for many people, perhaps the biggest holiday. I don't have any numbers in front of me, but it seems likely that Christmas is the biggest economic holiday and possibly the most celebrated. I've shared many times that Thanksgiving is my own favorite, but the 4th of July, Independence Day, that's a huge one, because without it, the others might not exist, or might look a lot different than they do now. The birthday of our country, the land of the free and the home of the brave, that should be something everyone can get behind. I fear too many people today only think of it in terms of an extra day or two off, and fireworks. Not that there's anything wrong with either of those two things. I get a day off. I typically shoot off fireworks. Well, firecrackers anyway. But I do like to know the why of things as well. And with our country's birthday, there's a whole lot of why to consider. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Last year I mentioned that a buddy of mine shared a photo of a granite monument. This was on Facebook. It was fairly nondescript, at least to look at. Reading it, for me anyway, that was another matter entirely. I don't have a picture of it in front of me right now, but what I remember about it is that it was a very old monument, very plain, nothing fancy, and the engraved words described the sacrifices made, in many cases to the point of life, by the founding fathers of our country. Make no mistake, those who took that conscious step toward independence by signing the Declaration, they knew what they were getting into. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence, right before all the John Hancocks were delivered, is worded as follows: "And for the support of this declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Frankly, every time I read those words, they give me goosebumps. Can you imagine how serious, how somber, and yet freeing the mood in that room must have been? Take a moment and think through the meaning of those words, as they might be stated today. We agree to support this declaration, relying on the protection of God, and we're willing to commit our very lives, all that we own, and our honor to do so. And they meant every word of it. By the way, me saying that they put down their John Hancocks on it was meant to be kind of an attempt at humor, because the Declaration of Independence is where that phrase began. It's believed that as president of the congressional body at the time, John Hancock was likely the first man to sign it, and he did so with a flourish that's remembered still to this day. Let's go ahead and consider the Declaration again, ahead of tomorrow. The Declaration, if you'll remember, was really step one. We told King George III of England to go pound sand. We were tired of being taxed unfairly. We did not appreciate how we were being treated, we being the colonist at the time, and we hit the point where we decided we could do it better on our own. Thank you very much. Oh, and with that declaration, they also said, hey, we're willing to fight for the right to do so. The declaration was our intentions, spelled out and addressed to George, but also for the rest of the world as well, so they knew what we planned to do. It was ambitious and optimistic beyond what words can convey, and it worked. As I said, the Declaration of Independence was a formal letter to the King of England. It was written in principle by Thomas Jefferson and edited by a number of his colleagues to include Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. It was adopted by the Second Continental Congress on July 4, 1776, hence the date of our holiday. The Declaration told England that the 13 colonies at war with England intended to no longer be considered British subjects, but instead to be a collection of independent and sovereign states. Well, actual fighting had begun the year before. This was the first step toward the formation of a new nation, our nation. The Declaration listed out 27 particular grievances we had with King George III, and that we thought them egregious enough to warrant the actions we took. In the years since, the Declaration has become one of our country's most cherished symbols, and the wording of it, some of the most well-known words in the English language. I am certain most of us remember at least parts from a history class in some part of our past. If it seems a little fuzzy, Indulge me as I read the first two paragraphs. And, yes, by the way, it always gives me a feeling of pride to read these words, and to consider the magnitude of what they meant and what they set in motion. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government, and to provide new guards for the future security, and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity, which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. I won't go into the 27 grievances. You can look those up on your own, if you so choose. Suffice to say, we took them pretty seriously, whereas we fought an 8-year war because we just couldn't take it anymore. Again, the author of what I just read was a then 33-year-old Thomas Jefferson, the man who would become our third president. He worked on drafts of this between June 11th and June 28th, 1776. It was edited by some of his most trusted colleagues, including the aforementioned Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. At 33, I was about to become a father, and I wasn't sure I was ready. Jefferson, at the same age, was helping to give birth to a nation. By the way, Jefferson was perhaps a bit more moderate and not as fiery as some of his colleagues. That being said, here's something that he stated in the fall of 1775. "Believe me, dear sir, there is not in the British Empire a man who more cordially loves a union with Great Britain than I do. But, by the God that made me, I will cease to exist before I yield to a connection on such terms as the British Parliament propose. And in this, I think I speak the sentiments of America." Indeed, he did. Obviously, things worked out, and hindsight shows us how that happened. Metaphorically, David defeated Goliath over 200 years ago, and we're here today because of it. However, if you're going to spit in the eye of a bully, you have to know that consequences are likely. 56 men signed the Declaration, probably fully aware of that last sentence and the prospect of dark times ahead. But sign it they did. In the years that followed, 5 signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured ahead of being killed. 12 had their homes and all they owned burned to the ground. 4 of them had sons captured and killed. 9 of them not only signed but fought in the war and lost their lives fighting. 24 were lawyers, 11 were merchants, 9 were farmers, and all of them were well educated. They knew full well the possible outcome of putting their name at the bottom of the page, and they did it anyway, because they believed it was the right thing to do. So, what does this have to do with the outdoors? The simple connection is this. You have freedom because of what happened 244 years ago. You can use that freedom to get outside and fish. There, a connection to the outdoors. For many people, the 4th of July is a very welcome day off, often draped in really great weather. and ours is sure shaping up to be super nice this year. Well, as long as you have a strategy for the bugs. It's a chance to do more stuff outside, which is outstanding. Enjoy your day however you choose to spend it. But do take a moment to remember that people died to give you the freedoms you have, and that it started with a declaration, a letter, for which many paid dearly, and in full knowledge that might be the case, even as they put their names on the paper. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.